Welcome to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast, proudly supported by Lloyds. In 2024, Lloyds began a multi-year partnership with British Cycling, supporting the sport from grassroots level right up to the world-class riders who represent Team GB in the World and European Championships. You may have spotted the famous Lloyds horse logo on the Team GB jerseys. Lloyds is also the title sponsor of the nation's flagship stage races, the Lloyds Tour of Britain Women and Lloyds Tour of Britain Men. Lloyds also sponsors the national championships and national series races across a range of disciplines. And although the UCI Road World Championships in Rwanda begins the countdown to the end of the road racing season, Lloyds supports cyclists of all kinds, whether racing indoors or outdoors, throughout the winter and into the spring. Starting soon are the Lloyds National Trophy Cyclocross Series and Lloyds National Track Series, and the calendars for both of those series are on the British Cycling website. So if you want to go and watch some of the best riders in the country in action, you can find out where and when they're racing there. So whether it's cycling indoors or outdoors, racing for medals, or exploring the countryside with your friends and family, Lloyds is there at every stage.
You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to this Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast Féminin. We are, of course, talking about the World Championships road race. And I'm sure if you've watched that race, and I hope that you have, because this is going to be absolutely full of spoilers, then I'm sure that you've only just lifted your jaw off the floor from what was a really surprising result. More on that in a minute. I am joined by the lovely Rebecca Charlton, who's just been telling me you were doing the comms, weren't you? The commentary, weren't you, Rebecca, for the World Feed, was it?
Commentary for Eurosport today.
For Eurosport. Oh, sorry, but we don't get to hear it if you're in the UK. Only
yes,
people do.
Eurosport Pan coverage, which means I get messages from the rest of the world, but not Euros, not in the UK.
I know,
sorry.
I missed out. But it was a pretty grueling day for you. 6 hours in the chair.
Well, I mean, I did start my fueling quite early on. I think I got it right. I had porridge and blueberries to start the day just before I went on air. So late breakfast. And then, about 5 or 6 hour stint all told with the pre and post show. So I'm the winner of today with the endurance effort involved in that. But no, what a day. I'll
even
hold back
surprise.
For now, though.
Yeah, even more surprise winner, Rebecca Charlton, actually. But I'm glad that you did like a very cyclist style fueling. And I normally, Rebecca, I normally say to you, don't I, like, oh, how did you enjoy the race? And then you go off telling me exactly what happened. So I'm going to avoid that today. And I'm just going to go straight in and do the old summary before even asking you what you thought.
I'm going to let you as well.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Well, I mean, there was 11 laps of a grueling circuit in Kigali in Rwanda that faced the riders in the 2025 World Championships. Karina Schrempf was the first rider to light up the race when she went solo early on and was given considerable freedom until Blanca Vas struck out in pursuit. Vas was caught and the pair of Julie van der Velde of Belgium and Sheeran van Anroy of the Netherlands fired across to join Schrempf. Van Anroy then dispatched her breakaway companions to lead the race in front of a quickly shrinking peloton. Further attacks peppered the race with Mariah Benito of Spain and Noemi Rugg of Switzerland going clear with 58 kilometres left to run. Their gap steadied at just under 30 seconds when Rugg's teammate Jasmine Lichty and Vas again went on the chase. That's when 9 riders instigated by a pull of Vita Musique of France went clear. They included Barbara Malcotti of Italy, Gina Caluri of Switzerland, Magdalena Valieras of Canada, Mavi Garcia of Spain, Avita Musique of France, of course, Antonia Niedermayer of Germany, Rihanna Marcus of the Netherlands, and Neve Fisher-Black of New Zealand. At the top of the climb, Elisa Longo-Borghini made a brief counter-attack but couldn't find any assistance. The 9-rider group made their way to the front, with the peloton stalling behind, giving them an advantage of 1 minute 46 seconds at one point. With 22 kilometres to go, Garcia pulled away slightly and took only Valieras and Fisher-Black with her. Niedermayer and Marcus stayed in pursuit, eventually rejoining them later. Onto the bell lap and some movement from behind, finally. Time trial world champion Marlon Royce has struck out to take the gap all the way down to 40 seconds and was joined by teammate Elise Chabet and Kim LaCourte. With 7 kilometres left and only 30 seconds behind the front group, Chabet attacked and dropped the rest to go off in solo pursuit of the front trio. On the penultimate climb, Valieris and Fisher Black proved themselves stronger than Garcia, but the final winning move came on the early slopes of the final ascent to the finish. Valieris struck for home, leaving Fisher Black and Garcia without a reply, pushing her way all the way to the top to claim the rainbow bands in what was only her second ever pro win. Fisher Black finished second, with Garcia in third. Now, I've tried to be kind of, I'm sure I've missed plenty because there was a lot of mad things going on in that race. And I tried to be kind of neutral in my little summary, but it was a totally bonkers finish, a totally bonkers winner. I think it's fair to say, isn't it? And no one was saying, oh, Magdalena Valieris, that's who we need to be looking at in this race today, Rebecca.
Exactly that. Someone said to me when I came out of commentary that I looked like I'd been for a really long run because my cheeks when I looked in the mirror were bright red, like I'd been really working out. But I was absolutely mind blown by the final. And I know it was a different scenario, which we'll get into, than it was when we had Omloop in the season opener. It was a different dynamic. However, I do think it is that shock effect where for kilometre after kilometre, I was saying in commentary, well, the favourites will sit up and chase, the favourites are going to come back. And then I started to think, well, it's almost a gap of 2 minutes to the peloton. Every single, let's be honest, every single big race favourite is still in that peloton and it's at 2 minutes. Okay, now it's 20k to go. Okay, now it's 10k to go. And you start to realise that opportunity for those big favourites had just evaporated. And there were so many puzzling moments in the race. But I see your point that actually we can't take anything away from how perfect that victory was. And we really must say that because Magdalena Valieris, she played every sense of it to perfection because she was evidently well prepped, ready for an opportunity. But when that opportunity presented itself, she stayed calm. She played it so, so right. And it does take you a moment to absorb the fact that she is now the world champion. And I can't even imagine how she's going to absorb that because it's huge. But it was really interesting in her post-race interview to hear her saying that although it was going to take some time to sink in, inevitably, she felt so ready for today. She'd said she'd had the perfect run up to it, the perfect preparation. She knew she had good form. And she just showed the world what she can do. And I feel in the last couple of seasons for women's cycling, we've had a couple of breakthrough riders like this. We weren't talking about Kim LaCourte-Pinard being a contender for the Tour. Then suddenly everybody's head turned earlier in the season. Then she comes into the Tour in that form and she takes over yellow. And we're like, okay, now she's firmly on the radar. And I feel like we're having these breakthrough stories and narratives. And Magdalena Valieris is evidently one of the latest in that run of brilliant, brilliant tales to come from our sport. But yeah, I expected her to do an interview saying, I can't believe it, I can't believe it. But she was more of the line of, yeah, I knew what I had today and the opportunity was there and I took it. And yeah, she didn't put a foot wrong. She really didn't.
And it's so beautiful, isn't it? Also considering that the World Championships will be in Canada next year. So
she's just got to do it twice, no problem.
Yeah, that's all she's got to do. She'll have the home crowd going for, you know, supporting her next year. But I mean, that's such a beautiful thing. Also, you know, she's a rider. She's at EF Education Oakley. She's a really key domestique. She, you know, lines up in all of their major races. You know, she was at the Tour de France fam. But, you know, we kind of don't really look at her on the start list because she, you know, she is solidly a domestique and, you know, isn't ever leader or, you know, put in that position to go for the win. But that's what we love about the World Championships, isn't it? Because it is like this one day, you know, anyone can have their day on this particular day. But also what I love about it is for a World Championships in Rwanda, really far away from the cycling heartlands, in a kind of new territory for cycling, to have a winner that is also from, you know, is from Canada, hasn't got Canada doesn't have like a long established history of cycling. It doesn't have that kind of cycling culture embedded in it. And so I think that's a really wonderful kind of parallel to see how, quickly, these heroes can crop up from, far-flung places. Also because I think she came through the World Cycling Centre system, which is the UCI system out in Switzerland, to kind of take talent that has been spotted from places where, which countries that aren't traditionally cycling countries, and develop them. So I think that's also a beautiful thing that, that was only kind of in 2020 that she went through that system. And now here she is, the world champion in the most famous, most historic, most classic thing in cycling, the Rainbow Band. So I think it's beautiful on so many levels, her win today. I also just loved how that trio worked together. I mean, I would have been amazed and delighted by Magdalena Valerius winning, but also by Nee Fisher-Black winning or by Mavi Garcia winning. And they were all so deserving because they put in so much effort. They took the chances when they saw them, but they also worked together so well. There was none of the kind of, which we'll come to in a minute, kind of the looking at each other, was there? They all had something, I think, to prove. Valerius, as as we said, this was only her second pro win. She had plenty to prove. Nee Fisher-Black, I remember speaking to her at the end of the Tour de France fam, and her being kind of a bit shaken by it because she'd performed so well but had a mechanical on one day that lost a load of time. And she was just really kind of heartened by her performance. So she was probably thinking, I know that I can do this and I've got more to give. And Mavi Garcia, who had a breakthrough stage win at the Tour de France fam earlier this year, and was probably thinking, I don't want to look like a one-hit wonder. I want to go and win the world championship as well. So they all had something to fight for. And you could see that on the road, couldn't you?
Yeah, there's just so much to dissect in this race, isn't there? Actually, so many different talking points that are just fascinating to get into. And yeah, I'll touch upon the way that trio rode in a moment, because you're right. They just got it so well drilled, and yeah, and played that to perfection and capitalized there. So we'll talk about that more in a minute. But I think it's interesting because when we do get a massive breakthrough victory like this at the level of the World Championships, everybody's probably scratching their head thinking, like, what have I missed? And Magdalena Valerius is a rider that I think, as a commentator, I've probably said over and over and over actually all season. But then you're like, hang on a minute, like, have I missed other big wins here? Like, has this been a gradual trajectory? But actually, no, as you say, she has just been such a team player and a workhorse for all her teammates. And Sandrine Coupeau was literally like weeping with how like it didn't go the way they wanted it to go for the French squad today. However, she is the trade teammate of Valieras, so she was just like, oh, she just works for everybody else, and now she's got a reward, and it's beautiful, and we're so happy for her. And I think you can't fake that. Like, when you had so many riders after the race saying how genuinely delighted, even though it really had not gone to race plan for them, but they were able to share in her delight, made me think, obviously, she is a very popular rider. But yeah, I think, well, another one of my takeaways from it, I think coming in towards the final, I'll be really honest, I probably had my eyes more on Nee Fisher-Black. I thought she was a really, really dangerous rider. For them to have let get that gap in the first place with that brutal nature of the course, and someone like Nee Fisher-Black, I just thought, well, yeah, like that's not really, I mean, not only her, that's not a competition you want to take lightly and let get up the road. I mean, with Mavi Garcia in there as well. And for me, maybe Valieras was a lesser known kind of quantity coming into that final. So I think that's what was staggering as well, is you had three really, really decent riders to have been given that opportunity to get that far up the road in the first place. But Mavi Garcia, when she crossed the line, just that like trademark grin, she was so happy, wasn't she? Like, she was so delighted to get the third step of the podium and a bronze medal. And yeah, she seemed really, really happy with that. So I think all three of them were just like, do you know what? Like, we just took everything we could from that. And ultimately, Valieras just was dominant. Like, the way she timed that to ride away and never get bought back by Fisher-Black, because we thought maybe that was still possible, didn't we? But yeah, she just had utter conviction, and that opportunity being ahead of you isn't something to easily navigate because there's so much pressure that comes with it. And she did that. But yeah, to the obvious point there, where was everybody else? And I think hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? And we'll probably have more stories come out of different riders over the coming days as to maybe what happened in their mind in the way the race played out. But I think the Swiss they had so many brilliant moments, didn't they? Where they had not won, but they had so many riders in an opportune position up the road. And Marlon Reusser, the strength that she put in when she sensed like, okay, this is the danger point now. Like, this, if we're not careful, this ain't coming back. And the drive that she put in to just close down so much of that gap, but it didn't pay off for any of them, with Shabby ultimately just off the podium in fourth. So it's one that we were definitely scratching our heads over and possibly still are at this point, because what got me is it's not just that the favourites left it a little bit late and the peloton was a little bit too far back to catch. It was that with just a few K to go, they were still all looking at each other. And I'm thinking, well, the top positions have gone. So although it's easy for me to sit in my comfy armchair and be a critic and say, you know, what were they thinking? But I genuinely didn't know at that point what they were still waiting for.
I know. I thought it was so interesting, actually, Rebecca, that you started. You very briefly mentioned Omloop this year, which was, of course, you know, it's the big opener in the European season, and we were really excited to see how all these kind of merry-go-round of transfers were going to play out. And then we got a bit of a, well, I don't want to say a damp squib, because that kind of takes away from one of our favourite riders, Lotta Klaas.
Yes, who won it. Lotta Klaas.
Of course, huge surprise win for Lotta Klaas. And no one was predicting that. And that is because we had all of these big riders looking at each other. And I think that is kind of a bit of that happened again today, for sure, because I've just thought, and you know, I mean, you obviously couldn't have shown that you were exasperated on the commentary because you're a total professional, Rebecca, of course. But when I was watching the riders, all of these attacks go, and all of these riders working really well with each other at the front, and looking back at the peloton, looking at all these big favourites, and they're all just sitting up and spraying water on themselves and having a chat, taking on a bit more fuel, looking really too relaxed. You know, they really didn't have a sense of the danger. And I think they were all kind of looking at each other too much. And I wonder if also it was a little bit because Vollering, I think, showed that she wasn't on quite as good form as perhaps we were expecting her to be. There was a few moments when like Longo Borghini attacked and she kind of lost the wheel there. Normally, I think coming into this, everyone was thinking Demi Vollering would be top dog for this. So I think she was not on as good a form as she normally is. I think that Marlon Reusser was obviously on great form, but she tends to, you know, on really super climby stages and races, she tends to follow wheels and then make a move towards the end. And obviously, when no one's attacking, you know, when none of the other big contenders are attacking, there's no other wheels to follow. I mean, I think Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, in some ways, almost her French team were too strong because she was kind of hiding behind all her teammates all the time. And I really did think that at that point, when that nine rider group went, and then we got to the very next crossing of the finish line there, and Longo Borghini put in like what looked like quite a furious, kind of almost frustrated counter attack, didn't she? There, and she kind of got a little bit of a gap on the other contenders and kind of shuffled them up a bit. I thought for me that was really the turning point. I think at that point, if Reusser and Pauline Ferrand-Prévot and Kashinivia Doma and Vollering had all come out at that point and started attacking each other, I think the whole face of the race would have changed. I think that gap would have been eaten up really quickly, actually, because we did see, didn't we, when Reusser put in a, you know, concentrated, prolonged effort, that gap came down so, so quickly, so it became less than 30 seconds when she did that. But there was just too much sort of sitting around watching each other and, you know, always seeing the riders, all of these big rivals on each other's wheels, you know, all the time, just waiting for them to attack. And, you know, no one actually was being proactive apart from all these other riders that had got nothing to lose.
Yeah, it exactly was that, because every time you got a glimpse back at that peloton at around 1 minute 42 minutes for a long time, they were all glued to each other, as you say. They were all there, concentrated. And when Reusser was like, okay, we've got to do something now, it's going to be too little too late, and did Marlon Reusser things and just started closing that gap down. As you say, that could have been the moment, and I thought would be the moment that everything changed, but then it just didn't. And I think I've pondered like Paulin Frampervaux, because at one point in the race, I thought, well, this is really, really smart. It's what we expect from her, because she hasn't put her nose in the wind. She's been hiding. We haven't seen her. She's got such a strong squad, strength in numbers. And yeah, one of the biggest rosters, not only that, the biggest names around her. And I thought, this is all going to play out perfectly. But then it just didn't. It just didn't happen. And if you looked at Frampervaux's face, like we saw in the tour, she just looked so like in control. Everybody else was suffering and she just wasn't. She was taking it in her stride. But then the move just didn't, it just didn't come. And there was part of me that wondered, again, just pure speculation, whether because she didn't come into the season with this as like her big target, maybe there was a little bit of, I don't have anything to prove today. But that said, when you're, you know, one of the best riders in the world at the moment, coming in, you know, off the back of the tour as arguably the best rider in the world, like, you're not going to think, ah, I just won't go for it today. So, yeah, I mean, it's evident that mistakes were made. Alisa Longo Borghini sort of said to the live TV cameras for Eurosport that she didn't want to say too much until she'd had a chance to go away and reflect, because I think she just alluded to the fact that she, of course, wasn't satisfied with how it had gone, but didn't in the sort of hurried nature of a response straight on the finish line, straight after that race effort. She didn't want to say the wrong thing. And I think she was possibly quite emotionally fueled at that point, with huge disappointment for how it had gone. Delmi Vollering, I read that she had some problems early on, was potentially bringing up, I think she said, I think it was sort of translated, but I think she said she was bringing up some sports nutrition, so wasn't feeling great, let's say,
I'm going to say
in
that next
the
time I'm hungover, Rebecca. I'm just bringing up some sports nutrition down the toilet bowl.
Yes, we've done that a fair few times, haven't we, Rose, over the years? We'll just use that next time. But yeah, but potentially wasn't feeling too great at taking on board fuel early on, let's say. And then she said because of that, she was maybe a bit more conscious of conserving energy. And but every rider, of course, acknowledging the fact that there needed to be a bit of a regroup and a reflection on what happened. I mean, the other argument is that at points where we were looking at some of these big favourites, they had obviously teammates up the road, but it was evident that some of those teammates were fading and weren't in a position to go for the victory. So then you think, well, come on, that's got to further back up the fact that we need something to come from that peloton. But again, there's the factor that they didn't have race radios, and we have seen this. A lot of people sort of say, oh, you know, does it make much difference? But ultimately, without that constant communication, we have seen these mistakes happen at this world level, because yeah, riders don't have that immediate knowledge on, right, actually that person that's up the road is fading. Or, you know, it must be crazy different, you know, to be within that race without a radio.
You are listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
We did see some mad moments, didn't we? Also, like, there was a time when Neve Fischer-Black was ahead, and then Ella Wiley went on the attack for New Zealand. I was thinking, I don't know what is going on here, because that would be a really unusual thing, especially for such a small team as that. We also saw, I mean, you know, also, you know, not necessarily because they didn't have race radios, because I think the Swiss team were trying to get as many riders ahead as possible for it, for them to be kind of to assist Marlon Reusser when they got to the business end of it. But yeah, we saw some some really unusual kind of tactics, didn't we? And I think that did mean that all of these, the teams that we kind of look at to kind of take the lead in this, like Netherlands, Italy and France, their riders were kind of scattered everywhere and kind of felt like they often had the wrong domestique in the wrong place at the wrong time. And actually, when it came to, it was because it was only really in the last sort of 20 kilometres that the race kind of, the whole face of the race kind of changed, wasn't it? So it's kind of like, if you don't have the right, the domestiques that you need in the last 20 kilometres, all of that good work for the other 100 kilometres doesn't matter anymore. But yeah, it was interesting because obviously it was, Italy seemed so strong, but then it was in the last kind of 20 kilometres, it was Longo Borghini was on her own in that group, and there was Malcotti was out on the road as well. But, you know, they had so much strength and depth and numbers early on and seemed to be taking the responsibility of doing all the work earlier. I did wonder, Rebecca, and I wonder what you think, if whether, you know, we knew that this course was going to be really grueling, huge amount of altitude climbed, and kind of punchy as well. It wasn't like kind of all lumped into kind of, you know, summiting one climb. It was kind of constant climbs. Was it, and at altitude, it was at altitude as well, it should also be said, was it almost too daunting, do you think, that kind of meant that the contenders were kind of always keeping their powder dry and they just left it too late, keeping their powder dry?
Yeah.
But then again, other riders seemed to take that as an opportunity to find, yeah, to try something new. And actually it worked out in the end. How did you kind of see that as the course?
Yeah, I know. I massively think that. And I think that's pretty much what Demi Vollering was alluding to, was the fact that she was trying to, kind of save that energy for later, conserve what she could and keep that powder dry, as you say. But actually then the realisation was like, none of us have gone and it's too late. And I do think that. And I think that there's a few things at play there. I feel like that quite often happens at the World Championships because it's like, let's wait for the moment. And even before the race, people were sort of saying like, oh, it's all going to happen on the last two laps or the last three laps. Like no one was saying like, oh, I'm going to try and animate something early, because everyone was like, wait, wait, wait. There was so much talk of waiting. And that, when the rainbow bands are at stake, is, I think, quite an obvious dynamic, is people just, there's so, yeah, the stakes are so high, people do want to leave it later and later. And that's why we can see that kind of thing play out. So I do think that's the case. But also, to your point about the course, I think when we had the opening time trial, we had big favourites coming into that TT that by their own admission just fell apart in the conditions. They were talking a lot about the air conditions, like how they were going into the red and feeling that they just couldn't recover, because you can't just factor in the elevation gain of the climbs, but the air quality in Rwanda, the level of humidity, the fact you're at 1500 metres. And I think that the riders were genuinely shocked at just how tough that course was. And then of course today you had it 11 times and people are thinking, well, I don't want to take it on too early, I'm going to wait for those last couple of laps. But by the last couple of laps, the composition of riders up the road on that course couldn't be brought back. So yeah, I think there were two things at play there: the fact that everybody wants the World Championships and it's just about holding your nerve to the right time, but ultimately too late, and the riders in that trio were too strong.
I did wonder also whether maybe Rhianna Marcus, the likes of Rhianna Marcus of Evita Music, could have done more. I mean, what we didn't see much of was the major teams kind of pivoting on their approach of who they were kind of riding for, did we? I mean, that is a big factor of that, is the fact that there's no race radio, so there isn't that kind of constant conversation about, you know what, we're really stuck, I'm meant to be the top favorite, but I'm really stuck here because none of the top favorites are getting any gaps. But you know, a really strong rider like Rhianna Marcus, like Evita Music, you know what more could they have done? Because you know, we saw them out there with sort of yo-yoing from that leading trio, didn't we? But they, at that point, they'd obviously done a lot of work already. But I thought it was interesting that we did see the major teams kind of sticking to their game plan, apart from perhaps Switzerland, who obviously it seemed like they were all in for Marlon Reusser, and then Elise Chabet made that attack that dropped Reusser and also Kim LeCourt.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, actually, was your take on that, because I just, was it me just making an assumption that it was going to be all in for Marlon Reusser? Because I was still very much thinking that. And then when she was doing so much work and then Xavi went, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe I've got this the wrong way round. But I just would have thought with the form that Reusser is carrying on from that real dominant ride in the TT and the rest of this season, I just thought they would be riding for her. But again, like we've talked about this a lot in the past with the Dutch, of course, they did have so many strong riders in the squad today. And I was confused as to who the priority was for sure.
And I think that is kind of, that reflects, doesn't it, on the road, that kind of confusion. I think when it's as hectic as it was and you have no race radios as well, you don't really know where anyone is. I mean, we have this kind of great advantage that we can see. We have all the cameras and we can see exactly where everyone is, and we can see all the graphics that are showing us how much the time gaps are. That is a huge advantage to have than the riders would have had, who are basically seeing their teammate go off and they have no idea how well they're doing, or if they're flagging, or if they're being, you know, there are counterattacks going off from that group that they were in. And I think we did kind of see that today. We did, you know, see the effects of that, didn't we?
For sure. And that's the thing, you know, if that is your level of fatigue at that point in a final lap, for example, and you're just basically making a move, trying to close things down and counting, literally just counting off, right, I've been through one rider, two riders, like you can easily miscalculate that. And you mentioned a moment ago, Avita Muzik and Rihanna Marcus, whether they could have played things differently. But I just think there was utter fatigue there by that point, with so much work that had been done by those two riders, that I don't think it was a tactical failing at all as individuals. I think they were probably a little bit exhausted.
Yeah, I think that is the mad thing, isn't it, that we kind of got to the end of the race and it felt to me like the big rivals were probably the freshest riders.
Completely. Completely.
Because you didn't really get to see that kind of battle of them going against each other. But, you know, it was a fantastic race, I mean, in many ways, and it'll be so... I think what we need to do is get Magdalena Valieris on the podcast, don't we? We need to find out a bit more about her and about her background, because, you know, she's going to be wearing the rainbow stripes, and, you know, what a phenomenal thing to happen. What a phenomenal dream to come true. I know she said that it was a dream that came true, but it comes with a lot of sort of responsibility, and that's kind of such a crazy step up for someone like her. And yeah, it's just kind of, it was a remarkable race, wasn't it? A remarkable race, a remarkable result.
It was absolutely remarkable. That is definitely the right word to sum it up. And I had a quote earlier from Kim LeCourt, who'd said ahead of the race today that when she was an underdog, she wanted to be a favourite. And now she's a favourite, she wants to be an underdog to try and fly under the radar again. And that's exactly what you were just saying there with Magdalena Valieres. Yeah, she will no longer be given an opportunity to fly under the radar, because look what she's done today. She's world champion. I mean, I can't believe it. And I bet she's going to take some time to believe it.
Yeah, it'll be so interesting to see, you know, how she goes on and what she goes on to do from here. I should also say, I think it's probably a great learning lesson for the men who are obviously racing it tomorrow. They're kind of doing a longer loop and then doing the same circuits at the end. But a great kind of lesson in just kind of being on your guard and kind of not letting the occasion or the course overwhelm them. So we'll see how they get on. Well, Rebecca, I'll let you, now that you've done, you've clocked up, you started on 6 hours of talking, now you've clocked up, you kind of
so
done an extra half an hour.
Every time I say it though, it gets more. You know what I'm like, I've been on air for 9 hours.
I don't, I'm gonna go and look up just what you actually recorded today, Rebecca. Yeah, that you just did the 9 minute highlights.
it's probably not that much. I just want to really quickly say a huge thank you to Jeremy Ford from Africa Rising, who's been supporting the coverage all week with so much information about the local riders and why this is so important that the world has come to Africa.
Yes, we should. Yeah, we did kind of bypass that, didn't we? Well, we kind of, you know, said it's amazing to be out in the cycling Heideland, but it was amazing to see the crowds, wasn't it? That was also a part of why it was so special today. But yes, Rebecca, I'll let you rest your vocal cords and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.